Welcome to Screen Heroes episode 84. I am Derek, one of your regular hosts. I have my other two regular hosts with me, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
I am Pennywise.
I'm sorry, Pennywise. The dancing clown.
The dancing clown!
Sounds good. And we have a special guest.
Hi!
Who someone should introduce because I have to sneeze.
I'll introduce myself. I'm Amber. Nice to see you. I have been on Costume Couture, so you might remember me from back in the day. You can find me on the Facebooks. But, yeah, I'm Amber, and yeah. I'm excited. I'm a big Stephen King fan, so I'm super stoked to be here tonight.
Longtime friend of all of us.
Absolutely.
We absolutely adore you. You're part of our Justice League.
It's true.
So welcome back.
Yay!
And we are talking about It tonight, the new 2017 movie made based off of the Stephen King book. We'll get to that shortly, but we'll cover some news. So big Star Wars news.
J.J. Abrams is back in the game, like I said he was going to be last week.
You did say that, didn't you?
Yeah. Psychic.
It's not too surprising. Disney likes to stay safe with their stuff. I mean, and he's the safe bet. They're not going out on another Han Solo or risk like that where they have to change their fire directors in the middle of a shoot. So
you play the Disney game. This is what happens. Sometimes you play it well, and sometimes you get tossed
franchises.
To the side.
No, I think some people, I was a little surprised they didn't just go with Rian Johnson, who's doing...
Ryan.
Is it Ryan?
It's Rian Johnson.
Oh, okay.
It's spelled R-I-O-N, it's not
I thought
normal.
I thought it was E-I-N, sorry. No. I'm just remembering it wrong. So, anyway, either way, I'm surprised...
That person.
I'm surprised that that's not the person that's doing episode 9, so 8 and 9 would just have a similar feel, but...
Do you really think this will end in a trilogy, though? Because I don't. I think they'll do, like, 10 and 11
and
12.
Yeah, they will definitely do 10 and 11.
As long as some of these actors want to keep going, as long as they don't leave.
And hopefully
the arcs are all
trilogies. Yes.
So, I mean, 9 will be the end of one story, and 10 will pick up, you know, the continuation of that, just like episode 4 and episode 7.
See, that makes sense in a perfect world, but this is a Disney... world where everything is a connected universe now, and Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, they're Oscar Isaacs, they're all fairly young. They could do like the next 12-15 years just of Star Wars if they wanted to.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing. I just tonally I just think they'll do trilogies to keep the same pattern of the numbered movies. That's all
right.
But they also moved the release date.
Yes,
so they pushed it to December 2019, which is not really surprising to anybody.
Yeah, none of the news today is super surprising to hear, you know, that.
I was more surprised that that wasn't the original date for the movie.
Yeah. They do love a December release.
Aside from, like, the Oscar bait and the one Christmas movie that releases every year, it's pretty much Star Wars now.
It is.
Isn't Wonder Woman 2 supposed to come out that time as well? So that's a little frustrating because I remember how mad all the Marvel fanboys were when BVS was coming out the same month as Civil War, and so they had to move it. So I'm curious if people will be just as mad.
I'm not sure why people think people can only see one movie in a month.
Well, I think that one originally, they were the same day.
It was the same weekend.
Yeah. So that was the problem, I think, more than the same month.
I love Wonder Woman deeply, deeply, but there's no world in which it's going to outsell Star Wars.
Of course not. I don't think there's any movie that's going to outsell Star Wars.
Right, so if it's not going to compete against it anyway, just keep them in the same month.
Now, there is always the risk that the Han Solo movie is terrible. And a bunch of people then don't go, but that would surprise me.
Even if it's terrible, I don't think that's going to
matter.
It's a different trilogy, different.
Right.
That's my
thought.
Well,
the Star Wars fandom is so. I mean, we sat through the prequels.
Yeah, we're still going back after those. So.
Yeah.
If they still have us after Attack of the Clones, they're going to have us for everything.
Yeah. I thought Phantom Menace was worse, but that's a separate podcast episode. anything else going on in the news? Any other stuff? No,
nothing really big.
Okay,
that I've seen.
Yeah,
How It Should Have Ended came out with Wonder Woman today.
They did.
Great.
It was really funny.
I love those.
I love those too.
Really good.
It's probably their best one yet, I think.
It was hilarious.
Yeah,
I haven't seen a lot of them, so I can't say. But it was a really good one.
Excellent.
I enjoyed that a lot.
I want your thoughts on it because the ending may be the most like feminist thing I've ever.
I haven't had a chance to watch it. Okay, I will watch it. I will get back to you on that.
Stylistically, I thought it was really cool. I'm not going to spoil it for anybody else, but some of the newer characters that were in it, I thought looked really good.
I agree.
So, all right. Well, I guess we can kind of dive into things then.
Let's talk about it.
So, Before we go into details, let's provide our spoiler-free thoughts.
Well, can we lay some ground rules first? This is very important for Amber and I especially. Are we comparing to the book and the previous? Or are we just...
The miniseries.
Yeah.
You can compare it to whatever you want. I have never read the book, and I just watched the 1990 version.
And I haven't reread the book since it came out.
Right.
Literally. Right. It's been a long time. But I think it's fair to at least talk about some of the things that are the same and different.
Okay. Just laying that out there right now. If we were going to let it stand on its own, or are we going to add to it? And I wanted to, like, compare to everything.
Let's just do that.
Cool. Let's do this.
So, Ryan, what is your spoiler-free thought of the film?
I think that it's making more money than I expected, and it was just all right. I just wasn't a big fan.
Fair enough. Amber?
I loved it. I loved it. I want to go back and see it again. Is it my favorite Stephen King adaptation ever? No. Is it... It's better in many ways than the miniseries. There are some ways I don't think it's quite as strong as the miniseries. But, you know, it wasn't quite as long either, and we haven't gotten to the second half of the story. But I really enjoyed it. I was amazed with some of the character development that I saw on that screen.
Ray?
I am pretty much on the same page as Amber. There's a lot that I felt was missing. There are quite a few missteps I think it had, but overall, I really loved it. I had a lot of fun. This is one of my favorite Stephen King novels because I think it has some of the best and weirdest mythology behind it, and I think this also started the whole, all of his books are connected. He has a macroverse, and so I enjoyed watching it a lot. And I don't usually enjoy horror films. I appreciate the genre because it's so unique. There are rules to horror that there just aren't to other genres. So I had fun with it. I thought it was a good horror film in a year full of fairly good horror films compared to previous years.
Fair enough. I think I'm somewhere in between these two groups of people. I think there's some things that it did really, really well, and I think there's some things it did really, really poorly. And I watched the 1990 version this past weekend after seeing the new one. I had never seen the Tim Curry 1990 TV miniseries thing, and that made me appreciate some things in the new movie more, and it also kind of justified some of my problems with the things that I didn't like. You know, I kind of put it square in, it's better than a lot of horror movies, but it's not going to make my top list.
And I think that's a fair thing to talk about here. I'm a horror girl. She's a horror girl. You would not call yourself a horror guy, would you?
I'm a little specific about it, right? So, like, my favorite horror movies are movies like Cabin in the Woods, the Evil Dead movies, including the remake. I loved the remake. The first Saw, I thought, was really great. More psychological stuff like The Shining, since we're talking Stephen King. The Shining is absolutely my favorite horror movie of all time.
It's in
the Kubrick version or the miniseries?
The Kubrick version.
Just clarifying.
Which I know is drastically different from the
book.
Very
different, but I love them both.
They're really, I'm not so sure they could have executed the book that well back then, but...
You should watch the miniseries if you haven't.
I haven't seen the miniseries.
Give it a shot sometime. It's a little dated, but good.
How are you with horror films?
I don't, like, go to theaters to see horror movies, really. Yeah. I don't really love being scared. It's not my thing. But, I mean, if there's an iconic or just a good horror movie, I'll watch it.
The Evil Dead. I know you're a fan of.
Evil Dead, yeah, I'm a huge fan of. I liked the miniseries. That was pretty good. I've seen the ones with all the people dying in weird ways. What were those?
Final Destinations.
Final Destinations, Saw movies.
That's a great kind of like summary.
Yeah, that's what it's known for, right? I mean, this movie, I think calling it a horror movie for me, I'm not scared of clowns.
Yeah.
It's being generous. I saw it more in the vein of Stranger Things or something like that, where it was more of a maybe...
Kind of a period piece.
I'll get into
supernatural
that.
Supernatural period piece.
But yeah, more of a supernatural drama than anything else. I don't know. I don't really consider it a horror movie in the vein of, like, Evil Dead or something along those lines.
Interesting.
Well, before we dive into details, I'll just go through the quick box office stuff, because it is actually really impressive. I know this is normally the boring part, but It made, if you include the 5-day total, because we're recording this on Tuesday, it made $198.46 million
internationally. That's huge for horror.
That's huge for R-rated movies. That's the biggest R-rated opening, surpassing even Deadpool.
Yeah.
Wow. It's the biggest September opening ever.
Mm-hmm.
Number one horror opening ever of any horror movie by a huge margin. I mean, the next one on the list, which is Paranormal Activity 3, which was shocking to me that that was number two on the list of all the classics. But that was only 52.5.
Yeah. You've got the Stephen King brand behind it.
That's true.
They did an intense marketing campaign on this. You know,
I mean, it did open in 400 more theaters than any other horror movie ever, it's about 12-15% increase. Mm-hmm.
Coming just on the heels of The Dark Tower, so we already had the Stephen King in our heads.
True. And we've had some good horror movies. You know, Get Out was this year. Split was this year.
Annabelle did really well, too. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So I guess now we're kind of on a nice roll for horror movies.
I also think that it brought in the nostalgia crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Because here's, like, maybe for made for TV in 1990, that was scary, but by the time I was in high school, they were showing that during class. It was not a big deal at that point. Nobody was scared. So I think people were kind of excited to see this back in theaters and like, oh man, what if it's actually like really violent and grim this time instead of, you know, Claymation Drain opening up.
Right. Yeah. You know?
Well, my theory is that the It miniseries and then this movie are the movies that people remember seeing as a kid when they were too young to see it. And so they have this weird, scary fascination with it. And so they were all amped up to see the one in theaters now. Mm. I think that was a lot of it.
That's a good one.
I have a weird perspective on it in that I'm 39 right now. So when the miniseries came out, I was like the age of those kids.
Mm.
So, you know, I was really into it. So, and now I'm kind of the age the adults would be 27 years later.
Yeah.
So there's kind of that parallel in my world. And I read It way too young and I saw the movie way too young. And I had already was a little more than a little chlorophobic. That's the fear of clowns from the movie Poltergeist, the clown doll.
Oh, yeah. Poltergeist definitely on my list of favorite horror movies.
Oh, yeah. Mine too.
That's another one I've seen. Poltergeist.
Yeah. I forgot about clowns.
So that started my fear of clowns, and then shortly thereafter, bam, here comes It.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever else you can say about that version, Tim Curry is a creepy son of a gun.
I'm going to say that I actually thought he was creepier in some of his other stuff.
Texas, come on.
So, no, not wrong. Toxic Love.
Yeah.
He's almost creepier in Home Alone 2. Put that out there. Something about I think the most impressive thing about this, though, is because whether you liked the movie, didn't like the movie, found it scary or not, the production quality is really high.
Yes.
On a $35 million budget.
That's amazing.
When you're looking at movies like Aquaman's going to get 165, I think, or 170, right? Suicide Squad got 165. BVS and Civil War got 250 each.
What did Deadpool get?
65 or 85, something like it was one of those.
Still
numbers.
Under 100. Yeah.
Yeah, it was under 100. That was a very tight budget. I remember that was all the talk about how tight that budget was. This had half that, or even less.
I mean, really, wow.
Right? So it's really impressive what they were able to pull off with that money. Now, of course, it's a bunch of kid actors, only one of which is really well known at this point.
And there's not a lot of computer effects in it. There's some.
A little bit. Yeah.
But I mean, compared to something like Deadpool, where you have a character like Colossus walking around for half the movie.
Yeah.
You know, this one, you saw Pennywise. I mean, I don't know how many minutes of the movie, but it was not a lot.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, still, you know, $35 million in today's world is a small budget.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, they made that back. They made double that just in the international market over the weekend, you know, which was the smaller of the cut. So, you know, it did incredibly well. So, all right, let's do this. Let's go on the spoilers. Let's talk details.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is your spoiler warning. If you haven't seen it yet and you care, pause, watch it, come back, and we'll talk later.
I think the best way to separate this is to talk about each individual kid and their story, because I feel like some kids were done so much better than some other kids.
Agreed. Hardcore agree.
Nothing about, like, the actors themselves. They all had damn good acting, but some of their stories were just better than others.
Agreed.
I will say, on that point, I think all of the acting in the movie was really strong. I do think that. I don't think anybody in there was a bad actor or no delivered their lines poorly or anything like that.
Yeah, nobody stood out as, like, the sore thumb.
Especially considering the cast is mostly a bunch of kids. And, you know, kid acting is tough. They haven't had time to really learn. And these kids, I thought, all did a really good job.
And there were some really powerful moments between some of them.
Absolutely. So. The miniseries did not have that. I always thought Stan was kind of a really bad actor. Yeah. But, yeah, that's just me.
But I do think there were some places in the miniseries where their stories were developed a little better.
Yes, yes. Let's talk about that. So, my biggest problem with the entire movie is Mike Hanlon.
So, agree with you.
Oh, my God. So, first
are we in 2017? Can we not shunt the token black guy off to the side?
Right.
How angry am I about that?
He
so angry.
Such a great storyline in the book, and it's touched on in the miniseries where he's the keeper of
the historian. Yeah,
and he doesn't get that.
No, they give it to Ben.
Yeah, and that sucks so bad. They tried with his parents and his house burning down and him losing his innocence by like killing sheep. But
that was just sad.
Right?
Yeah. I didn't even understand what the point of that was in the context of the movie. Like,
it
teaches you what the gun is, I guess, if you don't know what that is.
I'm going to get back to that, though, because it actually underlines my number one problem with the new version of the movie. But to your point about Mike, though, it was almost like they just... they had to make him an outcast for some reason.
I was going to say he was the outsider. It's like, that's a little tropey.
They're already the Losers Club. They're all supposed to be outsiders. But if you wanted to give Ben the reading thing too, which is cool. Two guys can like books.
It's okay.
Why wouldn't you have Mike and him meet in the library?
That would have been interesting. I don't even think it's necessary because Ben is the new kid. He has the love interest with Bev. Mm-hmm. Right? So Mike's the knowledge guy. He's the historian. You're taking the one thing away from him and giving it to the kid who already has two things.
Yes. I agree. I felt Mike was terribly underused, and they kind of made him a bumbling idiot in some places, and I felt that that was a disservice to the character and to the actor.
Ben was ripped off because of it, too, because he didn't get the whole, like, ghost of his father thing since his father died in the military, and that would have been an interesting...
Yeah. And totally still could have been done in a timely manner. We've been in conflict still back in the 80s. There was still the opportunity for that
Absolutely.
To have happened.
He could have died during the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And he was like a baby. So
I think they took his historian thing a little too far. Like, it was impressive for an adult in the 21st century to have all of that information, right? But this is like a 12-year-old kid figuring it out in the 80s.
Well,
so.
and plastering it all over his walls was on the serial killer side.
A little creepy.
A little on the...
Yeah.
Yeah, Richie was right when he was like, no, not cool.
Not cool at all.
Not good.
Not cool.
One of the few times Richie was right about something. So I felt like they just exaggerated that a little too much. It was a little too convenient.
Yeah.
Because without that, then they never figure out anything.
Yeah, the trope is, as you know, Bob, blah, 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 blah. Here's this info dump. And it did become an as you know, Bob.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. How'd you feel about Mike and Ben?
Two things.
Let's do this.
One, I don't know the difference between any of these kids after seeing the movie, like other than the female, and I'll get into that
later.
Well,
Mike's the black kid.
Right, I got that from context clues. But I'm saying when you say the name, they could have all been any other kid, and I wouldn't be able to tell you the difference. The characters are not interesting to me for the most part. To touch on Derek's point about the kid knowing everything, I think that was a huge problem with me for the whole movie. It suffered from Juno syndrome, where all these kids talk like adults, but they're kids, and they have the knowledge, they have, it didn't feel like, even the kid that was making dick jokes the whole time was like, these are not jokes that any of my friends would have made when I was 12 years old. They're obviously
You would
not...
have still been laughing about fart, ha ha ha.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Like, they were way too beyond what anybody was at 12, I think. And I think that everything was written that way for all the kids.
I think nowadays, and I think that's a point. In the 80s, those kids wouldn't have been like, nowadays, you'd hear that kind of thing out of a 12-year-old, but you wouldn't have in the 80s.
No.
I mean, maybe, but the thing is, it is
the knowledge.
The
but the kid that was super smart would not be able to rattle off all that stuff. Kids aren't smarter now than they were then. They're still the same
that's
age.
Fair.
The brains are still developing. I mean, sure, the internet, right? But I don't think that they would have the vocabulary of a 20 or 25-year-old adult at age 12. And I just think most of them were
Yes, it does make the like acting adults. That much more impressive because they delivered all the lines well.
Yeah, I think the writing was the problem. The acting, I had no problem with yeah. any of the kids, okay. really.
No, I think that that's fair. I think that in talking about Richie here, I think they took it a little too far.
Way yep. too far.
Like, I get it, dude. You have a potty mouth.
I get it. You're funny. You're the funny one.
It was disappointing from Finn Wolfhard, right? He's the kid right. from Stranger Things. If
he's yeah. really so good at different
from Mike in Stranger
Things. He was my least favorite of the whole crew group because it was just so unbelievably stupid.
I wanted him to shut up a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we know it's not the actor because we know how good he is in Stranger Things. He's fantastic in that.
Yeah, he delivered all the lines really well. He delivered it like I would deliver it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean,
and you know, will a 12-year-old take a joke too far?
Yes. I'm the mother of an 18-year-old. But yeah, it got, okay, we get it. Yeah. So that, I will agree with your point on that.
Anything else about Richie? Or
like, I mean, that's the whole character. Is yeah, really
that
just
was the they didn't develop him jokes very much.
And, you know, yeah, he had nothing else.
I did kind of like that he was afraid of clowns.
Yes,
because that was kind of fun. Instead of that was his fear. Yeah,
yeah. I mean,
kids don't like clowns generally, and that's a shame. I love clowns.
Hated clowns, so she really had that fear very strong as a child,
and as did I.
That's why it's a little weird that he was the only kid who's really afraid of clowns, and that like everybody had their own thing that they were afraid of, which was a little convenient way to have Pennywise look different to every kid.
Yeah,
but I feel like that's just done to make it harder for them to figure out that they're seeing the same thing.
Well, and
which is a little convenient.
And spoiler, I like that his fear wasn't really clowns. He said his fear was clowns. But it was really of being another one of the missing kids and being dead and being in the coffin. And
yeah, that was kind of interesting.
So that was an interesting layer on a layer there.
Yeah, I did like when they find his like his missing poster in the house. I thought that was a nice touch.
That was a well done scene.
That's probably his best moment, I guess.
I think in the movie. That and when he grabs the baseball bat out of the pile and kind of steps up.
Like, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
Because he was ready to face that fear.
Because that's the most like his Stranger Things character he is the entire movie. Mm-hmm. Which
they really
we like.
Are
we liked him as a hero in Stranger Things.
Different characters.
Yeah.
So.
It's cool to see a 12-year-old actor play two starkly different characters.
Right.
Because most of them don't get to do that.
Yeah, so you don't want to get stuck in the typecasting. Harry Potter will always be Harry Potter.
Absolutely.
Some of the others, I felt like Eddie and Stan kind of fade away a little bit for me.
Yeah, Eddie is the sick kid. Stan is the Jewish kid.
Right, and that's all that they are. And
Eddie as a whole, I think, is better in this one than he was in the miniseries.
I agree with that.
I think the kid as a whole, just all around, he was good. He was so much more believing in his, like, invisible illness in this one. And, they didn't... I just wanted to go up to him and hug him and be like, you're not having asthmatic attacks. Yeah. You're having panic attacks, sweetie.
But his character is going to be a payoff thing here for me because in the 1990s one, as an adult, he's still using the placebos. He knows they're not real, but he kind of uses them as a crutch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was a little disappointing to me because... In the new one, I mean, he basically breaks through that barrier and tells off his mom and gets past that, which is a huge growth point.
Yeah.
And if they take that back in the sequel when he's an adult, that will be very disappointing.
So in the book, instead of him still living with his mom, he's actually married to a woman who's just as controlling as his mom. Mm-hmm. And that becomes different because he's married, so obviously he's getting sex at some point. And there's the controlling factor. It's no longer the maternal, it's the sexual. And that could be where they go right with Eddie as an adult is by mentioning the wife, Myra.
Yeah, well, and I was interested on rewatch of the miniseries, which I did last week as well, preparing for the movie. His partner in the driving business, his limo partner.
Yeah.
You almost got the feeling like there was something more there.
Yep. Yep.
And I didn't pick up on that as a kid.
I missed that.
Yeah, and then there's that point where Stan's head is in the refrigerator. How's your love life? What's your love life? You know? Yeah. And I'm wondering if that was the very soft 1990s way of dancing around. He's gay, but he's closeted, so he won't come out.
Yeah.
So he's just going to live with his mom.
I suppose that's possible.
I think it would be interesting to see if they play with that in the next chapter.
That'd be very interesting. I'd be okay with it.
Yeah,
sure.
The relationship between him and his mother was... interesting in this one. It was. I really wish they hadn't played the fat lady for laughs. I get a little tired of that as a plus size girl. You know, but
to me, the mom in the miniseries is so much better. She is so much more freaky and weird. Yeah,
it's
and
a totally different kind of freaky. Yeah. It's almost like they played this one up to be a welfare queen or something. Yeah, and absolutely. I was like, oh, that was a little tropey.
A little bit.
But we'll get to the adults because that's where the movie falls apart for
me. I loved Eddie the kid. I hated Eddie's mom. I didn't like her. Stan, on the other hand,
I can't even remember what he looks like.
Yeah. Okay.
He's the Jewish kid with the yonkel.
Right.
And I mean, doing the Torah, curly hair, and his rabbi's son, which you get to see like an inkling of his father's controllingness, and then that's never touched on again.
It was a little weird for me because, for those who don't listen to the show, right, I am from a Jewish background. And so, of course, the Jewish kid in town, his dad's the rabbi, right? And he's fumbling through the Torah. Like, it was just so bad.
That is something that they explain so well in the book that he's the only Jewish family.
Right.
And
so there wouldn't be a synagogue.
There wouldn't be a synagogue.
No, no rabbi.
I mean, maybe his dad still would be a rabbi.
But they would be traveling to a bigger town. Yeah. They wouldn't be doing that in Derry.
You can't be a rabbi who doesn't do the stuff.
Right.
You
know?
Absolutely.
Last rabbi.
But that was just so weird for me. And then, you know.
I wish they just would have had one throwaway line for Sam where he walks into his dad's study and he just says, man, that painting creeps me out. Yeah. Just so you knew, for years, his painting has freaked him out. And it's not just something new.
That he just walks in there. Yeah, because that painting was freaky. It was creepy.
But and that's all you have to say.
Random. But it was very random.
Like, is that supposed to be somebody from his old family who died that he knew? Yeah. Or, like, is there some other story there?
Oh, I thought it was supposed to be, like, a Picasso-y type thing.
I'm sure that's what it probably is. But in my head, like, there must be some reason he's scared of it. Because otherwise, it's just a painting in a room that he doesn't go in that often.
I mean, as long as he said, like, this has creeped me out for years. Or something like that. It would have fixed that whole issue for me. Because
I've always hated that painting. Yeah. Something.
Well, there's a lot of that, though, where a single line of exposition would have fixed parts of the movie for me that the 1990 series did. Mm-hmm. They just threw these lines in and it resolves all these problems.
To me, they dropped the ball on Stan in the 90s one, too, because his fear embodied was the mummy. And you have no explanation for that. You have no idea that he hated horror films. You just
know he was the birding Boy Scout.
That was a little Stan's the Boy Scout the thing was a character. Little thing too, a weird thing as well, because Boy Scouts and Jews, usually we don't go hand in hand, especially in the past, and especially in the 80s. Yeah. So I felt like that was a little weird that in the 90s one, you know, the Jewish kid's also like a hardcore Boy Scout. I find that difficult.
Well, but they really glossed over the fact that he was Jewish.
That's true.
They really didn't.
Richie, like, pats him on the back and he's like, he's a Jew.
Yeah,
and
that's it.
But I'm saying,
that's fair.
Damn you, Seth Green.
So, I mean, then, of course, you've got Bev and Billy, which are our main two characters.
Yeah.
Billy's fine, you know?
Yeah.
He delivers the stutters really well, which is a difficult thing
to do. Much better than Jonathan Brandis.
Yeah, and as much as I love me some Jonathan Brandis. What? I was that age. He was a heartthrob back then.
I saw Sidekicks, too. I know.
You know.
Chuck Norris and
But Jaden's a good example of how these kids are good actors, and they did well with what they were given. You know, he stutters really believably.
Yeah.
You know, he does it really well.
But Bill, for me, was so much better in this version because his obsession with Georgie was so much more intense. And that's how it felt like when I was reading the book, is that this guy had a one-track mind.
They did play it up better with the hamster tubes and the maps. Cool. Those were very... It really did let you get into his head a little bit, and I did like that.
I did like the idea that he's been looking for his brother this whole time. Because the 90s one doesn't do a great job of explaining how much time has passed.
Right.
And it feels like they just kind of like, yeah, my brother died. That's a bummer.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, right. And they've moved on, right? But yeah, in the new one, it's very much, he's obsessed with this to the point of, you know, his dad telling him, you got to stop.
And you know, it's been a whole year. Like, because they flat out just say it. That little bit of exposition is really good to have, because in the miniseries, they did not.
Yeah. It is, but it confuses the timeline for me a little bit, because the whole premise of this Pennywise demon creature is that it comes out every, you know, 27/30 years,
right.
And for how long is it out, and then when does the clock start back over?
I'm not sure when, I don't remember if they said exactly when Denny died, but we know that, you know, most of the activity picks up at the end of the school year, beginning of the summer, mm-hmm. and we know that Henry Bowers says, you know, your brother died this year, so you get a pass, but that's done. So I kind of assumed that it was like maybe fall of the year before, or you know, or early spring, when it hadn't been this long.
So,
I don't know, honestly.
I mean, maybe. It's kind of like Gremlin rules, right?
Yeah.
Like, don't feed them after midnight. What time zone?
Right.
Right? It kind of has that type of issue.
The book is so much more fluid with this, because they flat out say that it occurs in between 27 to 30 years in mm-hmm. the book, because hunger doesn't have like a timeline.
Right.
It just gets hungry and it comes out.
It's 28 years. I need a snack.
Right. And sometimes he stays out for like a year, and sometimes it's 16 months. And, you know,
yeah, so the movie does not do a good job.
It depends on how many kids he gets to eat.
Does that really well.
Both picks a time frame. I think the new one was 27 and the 1991 was 30 years.
Yes.
And they share other dates that correspond with that bracket. So they don't have any inconsistencies in their own.
They changed it to 27 because it's now
been 27
years
since
the first one came out.
Which I would have appreciated if it existed in the same timeline.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If it actually was 27 years later, but it's not. So they just changed it because it's cute to change it, and that doesn't work for me. So
cute storytelling doesn't work for you?
It does if it's a cute movie. But this is a horror movie, so if you're going to change a date that has to do with this mythical character, then there has to be an in-universe reason, and just because it's convenient to say doesn't work for me.
I get that. So. That makes sense.
What about Beverly?
Adored her. She was my favorite.
Definitely. Hardcore. Strongest arc.
I mean, she's really the only one who gets any significant development.
Yeah.
I felt her smoking thing kind of bothered me a bit, because it kept throwing off how old she was supposed to be.
But that is a thing that kids do, is try to sneak a cigarette and things like that.
But she was, like, really good at it. Like, she smokes every day.
Well, she was also the one from the wrong side of the tracks.
Yeah.
In a town that doesn't even have tracks. Like,
yeah. It was known that she was the town slut. And she was the bad girl.
She was poor.
That's the thing. Like, it was every stereotypical archetype for that kind of character they could shoehorn into the movie.
The smoking didn't do anything for her character. If she didn't smoke, I'd still feel the same about her. So the smoking was just a weird habit.
But that's my point, though, right? Is that it doesn't do anything to add to the character. All it did for me was be like, how is she the only one who's able to sneak cigarettes in this tiny town? Is she tricking the pharmacist every couple of days?
Yeah, she's probably stealing them from her dad or...
See,
yeah,
I don't know, though.
That older guys.
Relationship like that, would she really risk it?
Yeah.
Oh, man,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I think the thing is, you know, she is, more than any of the others, she is the coming-of-age story. She is the one who is caught on the cusp between childhood and womanhood.
Yeah.
And she is trying to find her balance through the whole movie. You know, in one minute, yes, she's daddy's little girl. In one minute, no, she is not daddy's little girl anymore. In one minute, she's flirting with a pharmacist. In the other minute, she just wants to go swimming with boys and have it be all innocent. You know? So she's very much treading water in a way that I think more so than any of the other characters.
That's definitely true. Ryan, what do you think?
She was the best part of the movie for me. I mean, yes, her character was tropey, you know, with the smoking, bad girl smoking, and like the, oh, I gotta cut my hair, just like the girl in Power Rangers, you know, it's like...
Well, I think she did that for a very different reason.
It was for
me. Maybe so, but it came across to me for as kind of like just a thing that's been happening in movies a lot lately, and okay.
Yeah, so the woman cuts off her hair to be, or the girl cuts off her hair to become a woman is definitely a trope that is used. I thought it was actually used well in this, with the whole dad touching
maybe
her hair,
so.
With the whole that being what Ben admired of her, your hair is
winter fire,
January
embers,
you know, the whole thing was she's not ready for that.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm glad that worked for you. For me, it just was watered down because it's been happening in all these other movies,
that's
and
fair.
It really had no meaning to me because of that. If it had been done well in other movies or not been abused in other movies, it maybe would
have
had
more
significance.
Have you ever cut or dyed your hair after a big breakup?
Yep.
Yeah, me too. Just saying, it's a woman thing.
No.
Sure. So we need to see it in every movie that has a woman,
and
right?
A
teenage
woman.
I mean,
when there's only one woman, maybe.
Well, and that's part of my problem, I think, with the story as a whole, is that they have this group of kids, and it has to have, like, all... It's almost like the Power Rangers, where they have to have these stereotypes to fit in there, right? So there's the one girl, there's the one person of color, there's the overweight kid, there's the Jewish kid, there's the kid who's, you know, germophobic and sick all the time, right? Like, there's all these, like, they're all stereotypes.
There's the leader.
Yeah, there's no kid is just, like, the normal kid.
Well, if they were normal, they wouldn't be the Losers Club.
I mean, I don't know about that. Like, what, they're just the outcasts because they're young, and then people get beat up by the older kids, which, like, is a separate
didn't
problem.
Didn't you fit into some stereotype as high schooler or something?
Well, I am the Jewish kid, right? So I'm not the best example of that.
I was the girl.
But the thing is, though, is that that's, like, every friend group is not really balanced that way, and it felt a little forced at times.
I don't know. I think Bill, Richie, Eddie, and Stan had a lot in common, and they could have been, you know, replaced, or, you know, if one decided they weren't going to hang out anymore, then
I
don't know, they were just kind of swappable for me at times.
Yeah, like the red and green Ranger.
I know.
It's like the red and the green Ranger, right? It's the two regular white guys, you can swap them out, right? Like, that's my point, though, is that all the other characters can't be swapped out because they're specifically a stereotype.
They're a physical stereotype.
Not necessarily physical, because you got the Jewish kid. I mean, that's not a physical thing.
Well,
but
no, I included him in that, because...
Yeah.
Oh, see, I wouldn't... I'm sorry, I would not...
The four white kids that opened the film,
white,
like,
brunette
me,
kids.
Yeah.
But he's not just the Jewish kid. He's the Jewish kid getting ready for his bar mitzvah for his rabbi dad. Like, that's my point. You know what I mean?
Everything, all his character is...
It's
is
trope and
the
then.
Jewish
trope
kid.
And then, yeah.
He's the Jewish kid. If you take that out, then he literally has no background information at all.
That's true. I think that's why he's the weakest character.
But he doesn't. He's reluctant to believe everybody. He is reluctant to give into this because he's scared out of his mind. He doesn't want to help. He, like,
he's the one that doesn't want to commit to coming back.
I mean, Richie's like that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Richie always steps up. You know he's going
Richie
to.
Richie was also the angry about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't literally, you know.
Look, at least
they're not literally
say
the exact same character, but.
At least he didn't say that's empirically impossible.
Oh, man, so that's from the 1991. I hated every time he said that, because that makes no sense. empirically proven, maybe, is a term. Empirically possible, that's a weird one. But, no, I just felt like they... And you know, I haven't read the original book, so if it's written like that in the original book, then the movies don't have as much of a choice on that. I just felt like it was very forced to have these characters this way.
Yeah.
That's all.
So what do you guys think of Henry Bowers and the Bowers gang?
He was...
I liked him better in the miniseries.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, me too.
Honestly,
wow.
I felt like he was more developed, yeah.
He was more believable
in
the miniseries.
The whole bad kid who happens to be the cop's son... was a little...
Another trope, though, right?
Tough, yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
And this leads
and
into
not
my...
just cop, but dick cop.
Right.
Yeah.
This leads into my problem with... My main problem with the movie, which is anybody older than the Losers Club are all the worst, most terrible people imaginable, and the 2017 movie does not explain that in any way.
Yeah, they do talk about it better, I think, in the miniseries. They talk about how the town is poisoned. They talk about it a little bit in the movie. A little bit.
When?
Oh, God.
Because in the 1991, they do. They have some throwaway lines in there that just, they explain, like, that. And you can get over it at that point. Because, like,
no, there was somewhere where someone was being beaten and they just walked, the guy just turned around and walked away.
Well, right. But all that does is show that they're all a bunch of
horrible
terrible people. It doesn't explain why they're all terrible.
Why they're all terrible people.
So
right?
That comes to my biggest issue with the entire film, and that's Derry is not a character. And in the book, Derry is a character. It is a city that, because of Pennywise's presence for millions of years, has been completely poisoned. Like, everything about it. You grow up, you forget, you're complacent, you're an asshole to everybody. You're just a horrible person.
You either get out or you die there, and you're a horrible person when you do.
But that's my big problem. In the 1991, they do have a couple of throwaway lines that explain that, like, you know, if you leave, everybody starts to forget, because they do the back and forth that the new one doesn't have, and that the people there are poisoned and they become bad because of it, and all those types of things that the new movie completely skips. And so if you went into it cold like I did, I hadn't seen the 1991 yet, I had never read the book, all I see is a bunch of adults who are just truly awful people.
The worst.
And they push it a little too far. So, like, if you talk about, you know, Bowers for a second with Ben, that scene on the fence where he cuts his stomach, right? In the 1991, he's about to, and then they end that scene and Ben kicks off and falls down the thing, right? So you can talk about whether or not he was really going to do it, but you don't really know. And in the new one, he literally slices an H in this kid's stomach. That is,
and
just
a car drives by
and doesn't do anything,
and just kind of goes like, "Ooh, well, that's not good."
Without any explanation,
with a red balloon in the back, which is how you know Pennywise is influencing that.
Well, see, that just means Pennywise is there.
In the book,
the movie doesn't do anything to explain that he can influence other people.
In the book, Pennywise influences Henry Bowers the most, and that's the issue here, because I feel like they included all the horrible things in this one that Henry Bowers does, like the H, like he broke Eddie's arm in the book, not Pennywise. Pennywise did it in this movie.
Yeah.
But Eddie still got his arm broken. And he killed his father in this one, where he did not kill his father in the 1990s one. And
Well, you don't even really get to see his father in the 1991.
Yeah. Right. He did in the book, with Pennywise's help, with the switch.
And again, like, that's my, I'm not necessarily saying that what they did in the movie isn't what was in the book. My point is that they left enough stuff out that if you didn't know the other two incarnations, these things don't make sense.
Right.
And because it's not a sequel, they're calling it a readaptation. Now, we're going to use the term redo at this point for anything that has been done before that they're doing again, because I don't want to argue semantics. But it's a readaptation of the book, which means that it's based on the book. But if you leave that stuff out, then people like me don't understand it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have this movie where literally everybody older than these kids are awful, terrible people. Every single one of them.
The librarian wasn't horrible.
No, the librarian
You're right. The librarian's not. You're right. My bad. But everybody else is really terrible to everybody, right?
Yeah.
And there's no explanation for that. And, you know, the point about the balloon in the car is that, yeah, Pennywise is there. He's watching it, taunting the kids, but it's never explained that he can influence anybody, right? Because it's not done in the movie. Can he only influence kids after the age of 15? Like, what's the cutoff for that? He can influence Bowers
after midnight, but in
he can't influence any of the losers.
I don't know,
club.
Maybe because Bowers was already like prone to be a dick, that Pennywise just felt like using him as an instrument for evil.
Well, and that's fine.
Yeah,
right?
But
then later, when
be
the kids are getting close to actually defeating him, can he not use his powers against the kids that young?
I don't know.
Right? Like, so it's just, it doesn't work for me in a bubble. And you have to keep the movie in a bubble because it's the only one of its series.
Yeah.
Right? And so that was confusing for me. Now, the 1991 fills in some of those gaps, but the adults aren't all jerks.
Yeah.
Right? The cop in the 1991 is a nice guy. He's telling the kids, hey, be careful, stay together in a group. He doesn't bust them for making the dam or anything like that.
The token Irish guy in Derry.
You know, right? Yeah, I mean, that's true. But he's a nice guy, right? And there are still creepers, right? But the pharmacist is a nice guy in the 1991. He's trying to help Eddie and explain that his mom is lying to him. But in the new
he's Clark Kent.
In the new one, he's a pedophile.
He's
like
a totally horrible creepy person.
You know? So that's what lost it for me, was that this town is just truly terrible and there's no explanation for it in the movie. Yeah. Now, there's a chance that the sequel, which supposedly will take place when these kids are all adults, will answer all of that retroactively. And I don't know if that's their intent before the movie came out or if that will be their intent because of people like me. But
yeah, it may have been that at this point, since we're seeing it through the children's eyes, we don't know that they're horrible because they don't know anything else.
But we get to see stuff that the kids don't see.
I know, but I'm just, you know.
So that's all. If you want Pennywise to be more than just the one thing, if you want him to infect the entire town, you just need one line of dialogue to do it. And they did it in the 1991.
Yeah.
So that's my big hang up.
I wish there had been, and this is so randomly off the, but like here we are, we're looking at this woodcut from the 1800s of these town founding fathers, and there's a clown in there, and no one seems concerned by that. Why is that? why is no one concerned by that? I loved, just completely also off the rails, but I loved how the Pennywise the Dancing Clown stage underneath. It's like, was he telling the truth? Was the circus really blown down into the sewers? Who knows? How did that get there? What the hell is that about? He didn't look super happy about dancing. I'm not really sure.
Now, I will say, I actually thought that the lair, so to speak, in the 1990 one was more believable than the lair in the new one.
Oh, it wasn't believable, but it was cool in the new one.
It was well done.
I don't know why the floating people, though.
Well, because the whole, we all float down here. Oh, yeah. But here's my question, though. Where are they? That is so tall that all these kids are missing and no one has looked in there. Right now, again, in a bubble of just the movie, right?
Some kind of catacombs down in the well.
And is Pennywise building that thing himself, like on a Tuesday, he's just like, I'm gonna put this here, and like that just didn't work for me.
He's
at
just
all.
Piling stuff up. I don't know, but I thought it was cool.
Betty's legs go here, right? Georgie's arm goes here.
It just seemed too weird. Like the clown car was cool because he's playing Pennywise the Dancing Clown, right? Yes. So I like that aspect, but everything above, literally everything above
that
didn't work for
me. I thought that part was kind of weird, I admit, but I was excited to see the Pennywise stage, and it had this beautiful historical feeling to it that I did like.
Very vaudeville.
Yes.
Ryan, you've been quiet.
Just been letting everybody talk.
What do you think?
So going back to Henry Bowers.
Yeah.
That character was completely unbelievable. Like, why would anybody follow an obvious psychotic? Like, the kid was not a normal bully. Like, just beyond any normal, reasonable bully, as reasonable as a bully can be. Mm-hmm. Like, that was not believable to me. Anybody that's going to sit there and carve another kid, his friends are not going to be like, okay, this is all right. I'm going to keep hanging with this guy. No.
No. Yeah, he was off the rails.
And also, they killed him off.
Yeah.
But yet, he's supposed to play such a huge role in the adult side.
I guess he's not now.
Touch on your point, Derek, that wasn't just the adults being poisoned or whatever wasn't the only thing that people have read the books would pick up on and people that haven't would.
No, there's a lot more.
Which is a problem for me, too. I went in the movie, I never read the books, I never watched the miniseries. I went in with somebody who had read the book and was a fan of the miniseries, owns it on Blu-ray or something. And
it is available on Blu-ray.
Sure, I just bought it on Blu-ray so I can make Ryan watch it.
You know, we went to dinner after that, and I had to ask questions. For example, at the end, there's like one line that says, I'm already forgetting stuff. I mean, I didn't know that literally as adults they're going to forget everything. Like, that line seemed pointless to me. To somebody that's read the book and seen the miniseries, that they know that they forget as soon as they leave Derry.
It's almost like that was their attempt to explain why the adults don't care what's going on, but it was way too little too late by that point.
Yeah, and that was a big one. There was a lot in that little ending scene that was just, for somebody that hasn't read the book or seen the miniseries, I have no idea what's going on or why this is happening. That was a big problem for me. I didn't enjoy that part of it. The timeline bothered me too. I don't know if it bothered anybody else. I know you mentioned it earlier, but like it was supposed to take place in the 80s, but like all these kids are riding around 50s bikes, and you know, it's like, it's just a very ambiguous thing. In the 80s, not everybody rode around 50s bikes.
I'm a little sad Doc Rev isn't watching because Eddie wore a Christine shirt for quite a few scenes.
And I thought that. That's like funny. That. I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they
made it the 80s so they can make, you know, the...
A New Kids on the Block reference like twice. That was completely out of place. I mean, Stranger Things did it significantly better.
They wanted to have the adult one be modern day.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because it makes things easier on them, for one. And two, King was at his peak in the 80s, so they could have all these other King references. And
The thing is, if they want the sequel to be present day, then this one should have taken place in 1990 or 1991.
Well, it took place in 88 and 89.
Yeah, right, it's close enough.
Well, but see...
27 to 30-ish.
Again, this is like when it's the same problem that I had in Spider-Man Homecoming. If you're going to give me dates, I'm going to hold you to those dates. You don't have to give me dates.
Was there anything in the movie other than the New Kids on the Block and the literal date on screen that would have told you that it was an 80s movie, really?
Fighter.
I mean, the video games.
There's like a couple random things, but I'm talking about like the general environment.
Lethal Weapon 2 on the marquee.
That's the thing, that there's only the pop culture references.
Yeah, like the
actual aesthetics.
Yeah, the aesthetics, the people, the clothing even was not really very 80s.
Yeah, except for the pharmacist's daughter. She was his daughter?
Yeah. Like overly 80s. But see, nobody
which
else
makes
did
the
that
way he was treating Beverly even creepier.
It makes that even weirder, yeah. So I didn't realize, like, I wasn't sure why she was there. I thought maybe she was waiting for a prescription or something.
She was behind the counter. She's his daughter.
So. This whole time we haven't really talked about Pennywise at all.
Well, that's why, yeah, we're going
to. All right, so let's talk about him. Because
so I just want to throw this out there. Tim Curry is one of my all-time favorite actors, and this is probably my least favorite role of his when he did the 1991.
That's
okay. So for those who really love that, I'm sorry. I love.
You're allowed to like what you like and not like what you like, and I'm allowed to like what I like and vice versa.
I thought he was amazing in Clue.
Agreed.
And Legends.
Yes.
And, of course, Rocky Horror.
Yes.
You know? But I really thought that Skarsgård did an amazing job as Pennywise.
I completely agree.
Yep.
I think that Skarsgård was not trying to be his version of Tim Curry doing Pennywise. Skarsgård was his completely own version of Pennywise.
Yep. Which was smart.
And it was beautiful.
Yes.
And the costuming. So with the big ruff. And
Even the makeup.
The makeup. Ooh.
Very, very good. I think he's the best part of the movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the opening sequence, everything up until Georgie dies, I absolutely love that opening. The moment when his arm gets ripped off, my jaw literally jumped.
Showing the severing of the arm is pretty intense.
And the
I did not think they were
going to
do that.
Like the kid, like, crawling away. Like,
yeah.
Was like,
and the
was
blood going. It was hardcore.
Because, again,
And again, that was the lady, she kind of didn't follow up on the fact that there was, you know, blood in the street.
Yeah.
You know, the cat was more concerned than she was.
Yeah. Well, and again, since I hadn't seen the original, the 1991, or read the book, I assumed, just based on movies I had seen, that Georgie was just going to get pulled in the drain. That was going to be the end of it, right? But no, like, that is so cool that they did that. Like, I think that's a risk.
Yeah.
That they ripped an, like, 8-year-old, 6-year-old kid's arm off in the street, right? And then after that,
that is what happens in the book. They flat out say that they like they find the
well, they said it in the 1990s.
They say it in the 1990s,
but they don't show it.
But anyway, so like Pennywise is great. I thought Skarsgård did an amazing job. I thought he looked really good.
Oh, the thing that he can do with his eyes. Did you know that that's Bill
yeah,
is actually doing that. I read up on that. That's
really?
Not CGI. They're like, oh, we're going to do your eyes. We're going to CGI him to look in different directions. He's like, oh, no, I can do that. Bloop.
That's got to be weird.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Like a chameleon.
Most people can control all six pairs of muscles in their eyes to move parallel at the same time.
Yeah.
Some people get really crazy and they can control them.
My eighth grade science teacher had a car accident and he split his head open, and after that he could do it.
Well, seems like a risky maneuver just for a cool talent show trick, but okay.
I thought Pennywise and Skarsgård did, I thought he was great. I thought the way they used him was all right. I mean, they went with all the modern horror tropes. The guy that moves really fast and jerky, like from the Japanese movies and stuff. It's like, okay, that's not scary anymore. Any of the jump scares, 99% of them for me were like, okay, I know there's a jump scare coming. It's not scary. The only one that got me was when they were doing the slideshow and he like got huge. That I was not expecting.
I do like the slideshow.
That was cool.
Scene.
That was
but
cool.
Yeah, the whole scene actually was pretty good. I'll give it that. I really did like that scene.
It's definitely better than the 1990 version of that where they're in the photo album.
Yeah.
This one was better.
Like the scene with Georgie in the cellar, you know.
Yeah.
That was good for me. I thought it was sufficiently creepy when the kids started screaming and getting angry.
Yeah, that
but
was
then when,
cooler
like,
than
like,
him in the water.
Pennywise just
we
like
didn't need
doing
that.
The super fast thing for like the third time. It's,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
we get it. You can move that fast unless a kid takes 2 steps back and you can't catch him then. You know, that's his power set was very ill-explained.
They can't catch him because plot.
which is a problem because if you're having to rely on stupid stuff like that, then your plot isn't very strong. You
well, it's just like
or
the final
character
fight.
Isn't very
I mean,
strong.
The kids literally beat him up.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I get that it's the whole, like, they're not afraid of him thing and he feeds off of fear. The movie does explain that, right? But, you know, he's been feeding. He's been awake and he's been feeding. So it's been, like, 15 minutes and he's lost all of his power.
I also didn't think that it was explained very well how, like, if the kids believe something is happening, then it happens. Yeah. Like in the original, it was like the battery acid in the inhaler, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. In this one, you don't really see that no. until the kid pulls the thing. And he's like, it's not loaded. And he shoots him and then he's magically injured. For me, I didn't connect that. The yeah. kids believed it's loaded. So, because one of them didn't believe it was loaded.
Just the kid firing.
Right.
Kid,
yeah. I apparently guess. That's all it takes. I don't know.
There was a lot of inconsistency there. Yeah. And that's what bothered me a lot. Because I know that in the big multiverse of Stephen King, Pennywise is supposed to be one of the big bads.
Yes. Yeah.
But like six little kids were able to literally beat him up with sticks.
So I like the end fight here because I thought it was more deserved. I thought the kids really had to overcome the fear and, you know, because a lot of them wanted to bail. When Bill gave him permission to bail and Pennywise gave him permission to bail, I thought Stan and Richie were going to bail at least.
At least Stan for sure. Yeah. That's definitely his character. He's the chicken. He's the one who wants out. Yeah. Yeah. And he got eaten by the painting lady.
And then, to your point, I completely agree. They did not mention at all that if there's power in belief and if the kids believed it, they were good. Because one of my favorite lines in the old one was Richie, like, covering his eyes and being like, I believe in Santa Claus. I believe in the Tooth Fairy. Like, that was
I don't believe in you.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a fun line. So I truly wish that they would have done that, but
it would have made it a lot more interesting. The whole climax a lot more interesting. Yeah. It could have gone a little further with that and made it
all of a sudden they're creative. All Green Lanterns.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe not that far, but they could have definitely been more creative with it.
I do think as well that they could have gone like because they went pretty far in this movie. They rip off Georgie's arm. They cut the H in Ben's stomach.
Yeah.
But at the end, they had an opportunity to really make the audience believe that he had shot Georgie in the head. And they solve that really quick and show that it's actually Pennywise really quick.
Yeah, and when he transforms, he does the quirky thing. It's like, come on, okay, guys, we get it.
You could have taken a breath, taken a minute, let the kids think that they had actually killed Georgie for a minute.
Let Bill, like, second-guess himself.
Right?
Like, have a moment of, what have I actually done here?
Because you've been building up all of this stuff. The violence has been pretty
intense.
And that
scene between them was so intense. I just want to go home. And I'm like, I mean, my heart's bleeding for him, and... Yeah,
part of
the payoff could have been a little stronger there.
I mean, especially given the two examples, and plus, you know, they kill off Bev's dad. Like, there's a lot of violence in this movie. That would have been a good example.
Henry Bowers' dad.
Well, that too, right? But they didn't. They stopped short on that one. The one that really would have furthered the plot, right? Because the actually cutting of the H in Ben's stomach doesn't further the plot any more than the 1990 one, where it doesn't quite happen, right? But I think that would have made the ending a lot more serious.
I gotta say, I hated the silver slingshot thing.
From the movie series, yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, that's way more plausible for kids to think like, oh no, Silver's gonna kill it.
Because of werewolves and yeah.
But seriously, the whole, like, we have to battle this guy, because the difference is Tim Curry had about 12 minutes of screen time in a 3-hour film.
Yeah.
Penny Skarsgård, like, he tormented those kids multiple times. It wasn't just like, oh, I saw him once. It was, no, this dude is in my psyche. Mm-hmm. He is screwing with me for
I've spent hours cleaning
months.
Blood up out of my, bathroom.
I mean, the 2017 movie definitely, you know, ratches up all of the violence, all of the special effects, everything, compared to the 1990s one, right? In the 1991, there's some blood in the sink in the mirror. Yeah. But in this one...
And that is the difference between a TV miniseries versus a rated R movie.
Right. I mean, you know, $35 million will get you a lot of Sam Raimi blood, right? Yeah. We've all seen his movies. So, you know, they used that. And I think that worked because it makes it that much more, you know, crazy and intense what's going on. But I don't know. I agree with Ryan that they still used a lot of like that fast movement stuff and the very stereotypical horror things. It even tricked me one time in just not doing what I thought they were going to do, which is when they're entering the house for that last time when they all go in together. And was it who was the last one to enter? Was it Stan?
Stan, because Henry is right there. Yeah.
So Stan's standing in a way where it almost, I don't know if it was just my eyes or not, but it looked like the outside was a green screen. Okay, and I was like, oh, so he's going to get killed right here at the entrance to the house. And that they didn't do that. But it felt like the movie has done those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And that I don't like being able to guess that kind of stuff.
And that was the only one you were probably wrong on. Every single one you were predictable.
Because you know, they still do the stuff where like, all right, guys, we're all going to stay together. And immediately one guy leaves. Right? Like, yeah. You know, like...
Stan gets separated because Pennywise gets in his head, and then Bill just runs off after Georgie. So, you know, it's Bill's and the Eddie one that deserves.
Separated because he thought he heard someone. Yeah. And, yeah.
But still, you know, it's the everybody stay together thing, and he doesn't even try and get the attention of anybody else. Yeah. He just, poof, you know. But, yeah, I mean, overall, I think production-wise, it was really well done. I think the acting is really well done, special effects. But it's got some issues.
Are you going to see the sequel?
I have to, because I need to know if they're going to resolve a lot of these problems, because they have the ability to. I'm not saying that it excuses leaving stuff out of this one, but it will make the combination better.
It is a unique opportunity, because it's not just a sequel. It's a connection. Like, I almost wish they would have filmed them back-to-back so that they could have released, like, 6 months apart.
Like the Matrix movies or Harry Potter or something. I feel like it's a huge missed opportunity because the 1991 has the back and forth, and it's...
Structurally, I liked the 1991 much better. Yeah, it was an easier way to explain a lot of the things that were left out. But yeah, they can't do a 3.5 hour long movie or however long that miniseries was, obviously. So
no, but I think that they could have still done flashbacks and made it a 2-parter.
Yeah,
right.
Well, they could have resolved the whole kids plot line with still having a few adult flashbacks. Yeah. And then resolve the adult plot line in the second one. Leave it kind of hanging as a to be continued.
But now they have the Harry Potter problem where these kids are all growing up very quickly. And they haven't even
include them still.
They want to do flashbacks with these kids. And unless they're going to use existing footage, there's no script yet. They have not started production yet. These kids are going to look older in those flashbacks.
All of them will.
You know, if they don't start filming tomorrow.
Because puberty is vicious. Yeah.
Right? Like, and, you know, that's a big deal because... In today's universe, in today's movie universe where all this stuff is tied together, I don't feel like it would have been a difficult sell. Because they want to do a Dark Tower miniseries, but they couldn't have pitched doing this for it.
Yeah.
So I feel...
Hey, we want to film 2 movies pretty much back to back, and this is why. Like, oh, because of time and age? Okay, that
Speaking
works.
Speaking of Dark Tower, here's I'm wondering if we're going to find out more how they could. Has everyone here seen the Dark Tower? I don't want to throw
we did a whole episode of the Dark Tower. Yeah. You guys can go check that out.
So you saw the call to Pennywise in the Dark Tower, right? In the amusement park, there's a big arch that says Pennywise.
Right.
I wonder
missed that when he watched the movie. We told him about it.
I remember you guys mentioning it now.
I'm wondering if there will be a deeper connection if we're going to find out how Pennywise...
I hope not, because there's not going to be a... They don't need to make another Dark Tower.
Pulls into the Dark Tower movie.
No, but they're supposed to do the TV show, so I don't know, but...
It'll be interesting to see if they...
The way to connect it is the giant, stupid turtle that I hate so much.
Is it the one they stepped on in the creek?
No. Okay, so they talk about the turtle a couple times. So there's the Lego
the turtle.
Couldn't
save us.
And, So in the book... There's an opposite of Pennywise, who's also a superior being who got here millions of years ago, and he burped up our world. It's not on the back like the Native Americans believed.
It's not a Discworld thing.
Our world, and he's like the turtle created us, and he's the opposite of Pennywise. And the turtle and drugs teach the kids how to do the ritual of Chud, and they defeat Pennywise that way. And it's awful.
Oh, wow. I definitely want to see the sequel now.
You had me at Turtle Burped Up Our World.
Nothing like a little turtle spew to get a thing going.
If he was caught by
a
rat, it's going to be perfect.
Yeah. If there's four turtles, it's even better.
Does he have any brothers?
Right.
Who knows? You'll just have to watch to find out.
But for the record, this was the first book his publisher said you do not need an editor for, and that's why it's 1,100 pages of weird.
No, yeah. I think everybody needs an editor.
Everyone needs an editor.
And even J.K.
Stephen
Rowling
King,
still has an editor.
Stephen King will say that in his own book on writing. You know, he'll be the first one to say, "Kill your darlings."
Yeah,
you have to.
A huge lesson from it.
This little piece that you love. Put it in a file and go back and pet it gently, but it doesn't have to be in this book.
Any final thoughts on it before we talk about something special we have coming up?
B-.
Yeah, let's grade it, of course. We do our grades. B-. From
B-.
Ray.
I'll give it a solid B.
Let's see.
So I'm actually giving it the lower one. I'm going with a C-.
Wow, I didn't give it the lowest.
So, C- for me. Does some things really well, does some things really
well. I actually thought the direction was really good. I didn't mention that. The director...
Direction,
like,
cinematography.
There are some beautiful cinematography. Yeah, beautiful shots. So I thought that was good. I just thought everything else.
And you may or may not enjoy seeing it in the MX4D theater.
Oh, we didn't talk about that. So real quick.
The smell is offensive.
So three of us, Amber, Ray, and I, along with a couple other people, saw it in 4D at a B&B theater. 4D, for those who don't know, is D-Box, which are the moving seats, plus things like shooting water and smell and strobe
air
lights for lightning.
Tickling you, yeah, and poking you and poking your butt.
It's like
I was
a Disney
punched
ride
in the butt. That was not a poke. That if was a you, punch in the butt.
If you ever have been to any of the Disney parks and you went on like the Lilo and Stitch ride or before that when it was the Alien one that was really cool,
yeah,
it's that kind of thing, right?
Universal Studios had the Spider-Man ride, which was fantastic like that.
I will say my favorite part of that type of feature was definitely how it handled lightning. Mm. It did strobe lights inside the theater timed with the movie because it's like an extra track, right? And I thought that was a really immersive experience. As someone who wears glasses, the spraying water was very annoying, and I ended up covering the jet with my hands after the second time.
Yeah.
And I also
thought Ray may have tried to make shields out of napkins. There may have been giggling. It did not work.
But it was hilarious when it blew everything up.
It was not hilarious.
It was hilarious.
Personally, the smell was interesting. The fact that it could do smells was interesting. But I feel like it was misplaced in this movie. Because you have that opening scene, you know, with Pennywise and Georgie. And he's talking about cotton candy and hot dogs and popcorn. They don't use the smells for any of those things.
I wonder if it's because that wasn't real. Like, they're talking about it, but it's not actually happening.
But Georgie's supposed to be able to smell it,
true,
right?
Yeah.
So, instead, the first smell you get is Belcher burping in a kid's face and cars, right?
And like, the musty smell of
and
the leaves.
They both smell the same. It was burning rubber and farts. Like, that was the only smell in my nose.
I have a teenage boy in my house. That's not too wrong, actually. So
that was a little disappointing when they had an opportunity to really show off that technology, and they didn't.
I don't know. I smelled popcorn.
Plus, because Ian was eating popcorn next to me.
It could be because Ian was not just eating popcorn. Ian was showering me in popcorn. He was making it rain kernels as he jumped and screamed.
Well, 2 minutes before the movie starts, he tells us that he gets motion sickness.
Motion
which
sick.
We never would have told him
you,
to
Ian.
See a 4D movie if he get motion sickness.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I think
I'm
it's
sorry.
Cool technology. I don't think it was put to best use for this movie. I would definitely go see something like Star Wars in it.
Justice League and Star Wars would be fun.
Yeah.
I'd do that.
Maybe. I mean, I saw Interstellar in D-Box, and it was cool in D-Box, which is just the movement.
Right.
I think that for a full, like, two and a half hour major blockbuster, it might be just a little distracting for me.
That's fair. Fair enough.
So those are our grades. Those are our thoughts on that. We do have something really special that we are working on. So starting this month on our Patreon, we are starting a video series where we are reenacting with all of our might and no money, movie scenes, iconic classic movie scenes. And we will be filming the first one shortly here, and hopefully it will be a success. Our hint that we are giving you is that it is a scene from a Quentin Tarantino movie, but we will not tell you which one yet.
But I think you should try to guess.
You should try to guess. We have a public post on our Patreon, patreon.com/heroespodcast, where you can guess in the comments, even if you're not a patron. But if you are a patron, that's just $1 or more, you will get early access to this video. And everybody else will have to wait a few weeks before they all get to see it. So please check that out. You can find everything else for us at heroespodcasts.com and at heroespodcasts. Amber, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook at Anachronistic Cosplay. If you're local to the Midwest area, you can also consider joining Heartland Cosplay Society. We're a local cosplay group. We do a lot of charity events. We do all kinds of things. I'm hoping to get it more and more active in the coming months, and we'd love to have you join us. It's okay to lurk, too.
Fantastic. And we will actually be at our very first convention coming up this fall, Kansas City Comic Con.
So excited.
KC Mo at Bartle Hall, November 10th, 11th, and 12th. We will be there. It'll be cool. We're going to do panels and other cool stuff.
It's Derek's first table.
It's a first table for the Heroes Podcast Network. So we'll be doing a raffle of some kind, at least one. I'm going to come up with a couple other ideas, I think, too. So please come check us out there. And we will be doing a contest to give away some passes that we have. So that'll be cool, too. Ryan is at Buster Props.
Mm-hmm.
Rey is Siren Rey cosplay.
Just Siren Rey.
And I am the Star Trek dude. We'll catch you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.